So we're focusing on davening today. But the truth is, this is not just about davening. The truth is, it's about life itself. That's the emes. Because, you know, davening is an important part of Avedas Hashem, but in some ways, davening is emblematic of our journey through life, because life is a struggle. And the Yetzirah doesn't sleep, doesn't take any days of vacation. Right, so davening on a daily basis is how we connect to the Bnei Shalom each day. If we have an effective davening, we have a good day. And then we can serve Hashem properly. So the first thing that we learned about davening and the challenges that a person might face is strategy. There is a school of thought that says that if you have bad thoughts during davening, you should entertain the thoughts or deal with the thoughts. We should try to reorient them, find the goodness or the silver lining in them, and in that way kind of redirect this thought, make it into something holy. The Alter Rebbe said, look, that's not for you. That's for tzaddikim. That's for people who don't have machshavas zaros of their own. That's for people who end up having to lift or elevate the toxins that are left behind by others. If you yourself are tethered below, how do you expect to lift other things up? It's not going to work. So as such, the Alter Rebbe said, what's the proper strategy?
Push it away.
Push it away. Turn it away. You don't deal with it. The more you deal with it, the more it'll bring you down. And he'll talk about this later on. And he said the second important piece of strategy is you can't get down. You can't get depressed about this. You have to serve Hashem with joy. Because when we serve Hashem with joy, we serve Hashem effectively. If chas v'shalom, we don't serve Hashem with joy, it's not only about serving Hashem. Is there anything that you lack motivation in, you won't succeed. If you have motivation, you will succeed. Motivation and joy go hand in hand. Motivation means I'm happy with what I'm doing. Non-motivated means I wish I wasn't doing this. So now the question becomes, why should I be so joyous? Is this not a good reason for frustration that after all, I try to daven and these bad thoughts come, or these silly thoughts or inappropriate thoughts, my mind wanders. And somehow when I do other important things, my mind doesn't wander. And here it does wander. When the person is focused on work, they're focused on work, and they don't have anxieties and fears and lusts and cravings and weirdness and emptiness populating their mind. And suddenly when it comes to davening, boom, the mind explodes, takes in so many different directions. Is this not a proof that my davening is worthless? And when it comes to the efforts of Avedas Hashem, here I'm not really engaged in what I'm doing. In other words, I don't really care about it, because if I really cared about it, I'd focus. The person who's a basketball player, and they're playing basketball, they're focused on getting the ball in that net. They're not thinking about anything else. When the soldier is on the battlefield, he's certainly not thinking about anybody else or anything else. He's got to stay alive. He's got to get through this. The Rambam tells us halachically that a soldier who goes to battle, who thinks about family and his loved ones, who's doing battle, is actually doing a grave disservice to the Jewish people. If you're fighting for Am Yisrael, you have to focus only on the fight, only on the mission before you know. Can't everything else be pushed out of your mind? Imagine if the air controller was mind to wander. Just a little. Become a little mindless, a little aimless, a little weirdness. A couple of planes go down. He didn't notice. It's not his fault. He didn't do anything. Can you imagine such a thing? Hundreds of lives at stake. Incidentally, people who sit in the air control tower, they don't have very long careers, because the amount of anxiety and the stress and pressure they live with, that you know, the weight upon them on a daily, on a regular basis, is enough to drive them crazy. And they usually retire in their 40s or early 50s. They can't take it. It's not for a normal person. It really can make you meshuggah.
Short shifts too.
Short shifts, because you got to be really focused. You got to be 100%. A surgeon is going to be operating on somebody. His mind doesn't wander. I hope not. If his mind wanders, it's big trouble. And they don't have short shifts. And it's like scary stuff. So as a rule, people manage to muster their abilities and focus. And somehow, when it comes to davening, it just doesn't work that way. The mind wanders. Ideas come. You start in one place, you end up somewhere else. You wonder how you got there. Most people found themselves at Etzei, made them, and they wondered, the last thing they were thinking about was Atta Kodesh. How did you get in the bed Etzei? What happened to those pages? Did I say them? Didn't I say them? I think I said them. Maybe I said them. It's like a mindless activity, which is awful, because davening is about mindfulness. So why shouldn't I be down on myself? Why shouldn't I be depressed if I'm davening and I'm not successful? Forget Avedas Hashem. If you did anything and you were unsuccessful at it, you'd get down on yourself. If you're trying to be a chimney sweeper and you can't sweep the chimney right, you'd also feel bad. You're a failure. Nobody likes being a failure. Nobody likes lack of success. Nobody likes inability. So why wouldn't the person get down about this? And just things like, don't let it bother you. That's ridiculous. Anyway, I'm a human being. I take pride in what I do. Of course it's going to bother me. So the Alter Rebbe says, V'noida derech ha-nilchomim v'chein ha-nevokim yachad. It's known that in the manner of locking in battle, when people are wrestling, so what happens is, kishe'echad misgaber azai hasheni misametz lehisgaber gamkin. When one finds himself energized and you feel a surge of strength and you rededicate and recommit yourself with more fervor, with more might, what invariably will happen is that the opponent also will do same. It's just the way it is. This is the nature of competition. The competition will always feed off each other. So when one side of the competition decides to make what we call a push, you know, you're making a push forward, you're trying to automatically, what will the other side of the competition do? They'll work harder too. You know, Shlomo HaMelech said this with regard to authorship of books and the spreading of wisdom. He said that kina sofrim tar b'chokhma, that the jealousy of scribes increases their notion of wisdom. Why? Because people are competitive. It's not a bad thing. This is actually a good jealousy. Jealousy of spirituality, jealousy of accomplishment is a good thing. If it makes us do something good, adarabha, that's a good thing. It makes more good things happen in this world. And the Rashba, he said, even though he was asked a question about giving tzedakah and somebody who wanted to remain anonymous, he said, anonymity is beautiful, but publicity is even better. They said, why? What do you mean? He said, mitzvah lefarsim oisei mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to publicize. Why? Because then this will inspire others. So for whatever you're losing by abandoning anonymity, you're gaining by seeding and engaging and encouraging and catalyzing future growth. So it's actually...
As long as it doesn't fit the ego, it's like those big buildings with names and stuff like that.
You know, you say that, but the Mittler Rebbe said otherwise.
Right.
What right? When did the Mittler Rebbe say otherwise? A chassid came to the Mittler Rebbe and he said that he chazes chassidus. He reviews and he delivers teachings of chassidus when he would travel. You know, those days they didn't just hop into a plane and travel across Russia. They would have to travel to the Rebbe. They would travel in a horse and wagon. Sometimes they would walk. They would come to different places. It wasn't so they weren't living so far apart anyway. And he would teach. Oh, there's chassids here. Everybody would come together. And he would share the latest maimer, the latest words of chassidus that he heard. And he told the Mittler Rebbe that he wants to stop doing this. And the Mittler Rebbe said, why? And he said, because I feel a sense of arrogance, sense of conceit. I know that I'm articulate. And when I deliver these teachings, I see that it's effective. And I take pride in that. And that's a terrible thing. I shouldn't be prideful. So what did the Mittler Rebbe say? He said, which literally translates as, you can turn into an onion, but keep chazer in chassidus. Which the Rebbe explained, doesn't sound like an onion. Nobody eats onions like you eat apples. No normal person just bites into onions. But onions are a very important part of cuisine. What do we use onions for?
Salad.
For salads, for everything. But what do we do when we use the onions?
Cook it.
We dice the onions, we chop the onions. Because when you chop the onions up and you make them, you spread them out in little pieces, then it's nice. It brings taste into the food. If you just take an onion and eat it like that, it's not very pleasant.
So can you repeat what the Rebbe said?
The Mittler Rebbe said, Atzibel is often the verim. You can turn into an onion, but chassidus you should continue to review. The point was that if a person, arrogance is a bad thing. And what happens if there's an issue of arrogance or conceit? Well, it could easily be confused sometimes with healthy self-confidence. A person has no self-confidence, a person has confidence, sometimes it can be very easily moved into pridefulness. There's a very slender barrier between pridefulness and self-confidence. So what did the Mittler Rebbe say? You'd be like an onion. If you remain an onion, like a juggernaut of pride, of confidence, altogether, then it's not a good thing. So what do you have to do? To chop it up in pieces.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the point is, The Mittler Rebbe acknowledged that this person would have a challenge. That would be his issue. We all have challenges. Some of our challenges are we have phobias and anxieties and fears. Some of our challenges, we have lethargy and laziness, and we just can't get it together. Some of our challenges are anger and frustration. Some of our challenges are arrogance and conceit and pridefulness. Everybody has different challenges. Everybody really has all these challenges, but everybody has a different emphasis on one or another, what your avodah, your service in life is, what the Eibishter gave you special challenges. So the Mittler Rebbe acknowledged that this chassid's challenge. This chassid's challenge was that he easily crossed over from confidence into conceit, that he easily moved from a sense of accomplishment into a sense of toxic pridefulness. And that's not a good thing. Nonetheless, the Mittler Rebbe said, that's not why you should stop to repeat chassidus. You need to keep doing what you're doing. So you're frustrated about the guy who has his name on a building?
I'm not frustrated. I mean, if it's done in a chassidish way, like the Mittler Rebbe says, it's totally fine.
You know what? If it gets other people to give tzedakah, so be it. So be it. At the end of the day, if another hospital gets built, if another poor person is fed, if another child is educated, that's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. Yeah. So what? So let the name be on a building. Let the name be on 20 buildings. Who cares? The main thing is we have a destination to get to.
That I agree.
We got a destination to get to. That's the bottom line. So there's going to be a battle to get to this destination. And this is not just a battle over davening. It's a battle over everything. What does the Yetzer Hara want from a person? What does he want? He wants you to be a self-centered person who focuses only on sensual libido and self-aggrandizement and conceit and arrogance, all the negative qualities that a person has. That's what the Yetzer Hara wants. What does the Nefesh HaLikis want? What does the godly soul want? He wants you to be selfless. He wants you to be spiritually minded. He wants you to yearn for God. He wants you to put into action good things, positive things that are engendered by the yearning and craving to be close to Hashem. That's what the Yetzer Tov wants. And they're in a battle. So the way it is when you're in any kind of competition, when one opponent tries harder, the other opponent also somehow tries harder. We don't even have to talk about a battle. It's not about violence. If you have Olympians who are competing on the racetrack, whatever it might be, when one tries harder, the other one gives a spurt. People are trying to win the marathon. One runs faster. All of a sudden, the other one somehow is encouraged to run even faster.
Then you have a new world record.
And you have a new world record. And how did the new world record come about? Yeah. It came about through people's competitive nature. Competition is a nature that Hashem gave us. It's called Netzach. It's one of the Esar Sfiris. One of the 10 spheres is called the nature to be competitive. All of us are competitive to some degree. Some of us are competitive to the degree of lunacy. We're always in competition with everybody. We have to be outdoing everybody, and that's not healthy. Some of us are hardly motivated altogether. That's not healthy either. So we have to work on creating a synergy or a balance of healthy competition. But the nature of competition, which every one of us understands because it's all part of our psyche as human beings, we were little children. We were playing in contests, and there was these games you played in class. And competitivity is part of. It's like almost like the drive to eat, for people to be competitive. Everybody's competitive to some degree. So when you it's Alter Rebbe is going to give you a metaphor of competition, a competitive metaphor. It's easy for us to understand this, and we know this. We all know this from our own whatever opponent we might have, whatever situation we might be in. Because of the nature of competitivity, which is part of who we are, that when one side tries harder, the other side tries harder. So the Alter Rebbe says, this is not esoteric. This is not some kind of spiritual concept that he's conveying to us. It's simple. When people are in competition, when the person's in a competitive situation, when one is mizgaber, so then hasheni misamet, so mizgaber gamkin. Invariably, that's what happens. Vilochein, now taking this to its natural conclusion, and therefore, kishenefesh olekis misametzes umisgaberes. When the nefesh, when the godly soul pulls itself together and refocuses itself and says, "I am going to serve Hashem now. I'm going to daven." And what do you think happens then with the other side, with the opponent? There's a competitive nature here. There's a nefesh olekis, there's a godly soul, which is being competitive with a nefesh habamis. So when the nefesh olekis says, I am going to accomplish what I set out to do, I'm going to daven in a meaningful way. What do you think the nefesh habamis does?
Get more sophisticated.
He gets all inspired too, because he's competitive. He said, you're going to daven better? I'm going to do my best to stop you from davening. Which really could be about anything But davening is what we're talking about now. And davening becomes ultimately a paradigm for the concept of Avedus Hashem at large. Here's something really interesting. When we talk about davening, we talk to most people outside of the rubric of Judaism about prayer. What word will come to mind?
Meditation,
contemplation, solitude, quiet, peace. These are the kind of words people think of, yes?
Bonding with HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Bonding, yeah, that's communion. Do you know what the Zohar uses? You know the word the Zohar? The Zohar uses the word competition.
Competition?
Yeah. If you want to be very graphic, the Zohar actually uses the word battle.
Tacharut?
No, but Tacharut is... Krava. Shat Salota, says the Zohar. Shat Krava. The time of davening is the time of war. 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 I promise you, if you would speak to back, I don't know, I promise. If you, I guarantee you, if you speak to people, ask them, show them, give them 10 words and ask them to choose the word which most reflective of what they would think is a meaningful davening experience, and you put war as one of those 10 words, or even put competition as one of those 10 words, I very much doubt if you gave them 9 words to circle that war would be one of them. And yet that's what the Zohar calls it. The Zohar says davening, it's a war. It's a battle. It's a competition. It's a match. A match.
But it's funny that during work we don't have that problem.
During work we don't have that problem, quite possibly, because work is not a competition. There's not a battle.
When you, the
Yetzer Hara is just fine with you working. The Yetzer Hara might even be fine with you saying L'chaim. That's what I talked about yesterday, the Verbringen. Yeah. That's what the Yetzer Hara doesn't, he doesn't get you. He'll go Verbringen. No problem. He sees you drinking whiskey, he's happy. So that's why the Verbringen is a very opportune time for us to be able to accomplish good things. But first you have to daven. A Yid who davens like a chassid could Verbringen like a chassid. If you don't daven, don't expect the Verbringen to have any meaning. It's very interesting that Yaakov Avinu, when he says that, he talks about the piece of land that he's going to give to Yosef, he's going to bequeath to Yosef, he talks about Shechem. He says, "Shelakachti miyad ha'amoridi," that it took from the Amorites, "becharbi ubekashti," with my bow and with my sword. Sword and bow. So what does this mean, sword and bow? You know how Unculus renders it? Bitzoloti uvavu'uti, with my supplication and prayer. If I showed you a bunch of items, so which item do you identify with prayer? I'll show you a book. I'll show you a pew. I'll show you a talus. I'll show you, I don't know. Different religions have different things they hold on to, rosaries, whatever. Different... Who would choose a sword? Or a bow and arrow and say, oh, that's davening. Yeah, that's the sword. That's davening. Or an M16. That represents prayer. Nobody. But the uncle says that Yaakov meant to tell Yosef, I took that land with my supplication and my prayer. What does that mean? So clearly, we're missing something. The natural Western perspective of prayer is deficient, clearly, because the Torah literature talks about prayer differently. Ah, the Alter Rebbe says, so think about this now. Because what's really happening when I daven is that there is an inner battle, a competition of sorts raging within. What's the competition? The nefesh olekis, the godly soul, desperately wants to daven. He desperately wants all those beautiful things we talked about, communion and contemplation and inner peace and solitude. He wants all those things. He craves those things. So he davens. But the Nefesh HaBahamas does not want that to happen. The Nefesh HaBahamas wants you to eat another steak. The Nefesh HaBahamas wants you to run after another, pursue some other empty pursuit, some other narishkeit. That's what the Nefesh HaBahamas wants. The Nefesh HaBahamas sees you davening. He gets very nervous. He says, you know, if this person will start to daven seriously, I'll be in trouble. I'll be out of a job here. So if you in danger of losing your job, what will you do? You fight. This is survival. The Nefesh HaBahamas, for him, it's an actual battle of survival. He can't have you go and become a Chassidus Shiit. If you become a Chassidus Shiit, he's always kapulich machra, as they say. He's not a hat maker anymore. He's not going to have a parnasa. So what does the Nefesh HaBahamas do? He fights. So you should know, as a matter of fact, that every davening is going to be a battle. It doesn't say this about any other Yiddishkeit experience. It doesn't say this about Torah. There are people who actually enjoy intellectual pursuit. They enjoy attending classes. It's not a battle for them. There's some people who don't, and for them it's a battle. And that's a virtue. Like the famous story that Tzemach Tzedek told the Chassid who complained he doesn't like to learn. Tzemach Tzedek said, that's a problem? My problem is I like to learn. I wish I didn't like to learn so much so I could actually have learning Torah out of Avodas Hashem. There are people who study all kinds of subjects. What, academic professors at tzaddikim? Most of them support BDS. Or even like, well, they're not tzaddikim. But they study. Yeah. Why? They enjoy studying. They enjoy the intellectual. They relish the intellectual challenge. They enjoy information, processing information, digesting information. They enjoy restating information. There are people who like to study. Nobody likes to daven. Somebody asked me once, how come every Orthodox show I go to, everybody talks all the time? So I go to my Reform temple, everybody's quiet. I said, I'll tell you why. Because when people are really davening, there's going to be a battle not to daven. The Nefesh HaBahamas doesn't want people to daven. When people go to a house of worship and they're terrified out of their wits and can't wait to get out of there and don't really relate to it, sure, they're quiet. You know, it's like, is it over yet? So walk in, walk out, that's it. From a yid's davening is part of life. It's not a once in a while thing that he attends because he has to attend an event. It's in a thing he does every day, and it's a battle. I'm not condoning talking during davening. We shouldn't talk during davening. We should be quiet. We should be respectful. But that's why it happens. That's why it happens. Not because from a yidn care less about davening. It's because they care more about davening. His davening is more serious, and precisely because it's more serious, it's more of a battle. And when it comes to other things, it might be just as respectful as everybody else. The point that the Alter Rebbe is making is a very, very important idea. The point is that you should know that when a person is davening and suddenly has bad thoughts, that's not a sign that davening is worthless. That's a sign he's really davening. Because if he wasn't having any kind of competition or battle, what would this mean? It means he's not really davening. Davening is always going to be a shas slesa, shas krava, a prayer time, a battle time. There's always going to be. The Nefesh HaBahamas is fighting for himself. So therefore, we should not make the mistaken approach, which is typical. That people want to prove and conclude from the fact that strange, alien, weird thoughts pop into mind during davening. This is the biggest proof. Their davening is worthless. Because if it would be valuable, if the person would care about davening, the person would value davening, they'd be thinking about the davening. Now, this is not to say that everybody who sits down mindlessly to daven and chit-chats and has fun and has a wandering mind, that necessarily that's because the Nefesh HaBahamas is fighting. This is when somebody davens b'kavona. When a person puts zero effort into davening and gets zero out of davening, there's no surprises. You put zero effort into anything, you'll get zero effort out of it. So people who don't try to daven say, oh, I have these bad thoughts. What do you think? Of course you did. You didn't even try to daven. The person who is engaged in foolishness and folly till a second before davening and can't wait till the next, installment of Narishkeit that follows davening, and in the middle of davening, they're thinking about the Narishkeit, the silliness and folly of before and after, this is not surprising. Of course, how else would you expect it to be? Out of foolishness comes foolishness. It's a domino effect. But we speak about here a person who made an effort to prepare for davening. And they studied Torah before davening. And maybe they spent some time contemplating before davening. And they did things to make sure that davening is meaningful. And then after they did that, they tried really hard to daven. And they did all the things you're supposed to do. They looked in the siddur and they pointed with their finger and they tried very hard to think about the meaning of the words. And they're still getting these crazy thoughts. And the mind is still going in seven weird directions. I'm wasting my time. For this person, the Alter Rebbe comes along and he says, there's no proof, she'ain tfilasim klum, that people say to themselves, ilu hispalel koroi, if I would be davening in a suitable and appropriate fashion, v'nochein, the lehoyon neflu machshav azars, then these bad thoughts wouldn't be coming my way. Wrong, says the Alter Rebbe. Wrong? Isn't that logical? If I cared about something, then my mind would be on it. If my mind isn't on it, that means I don't care about it. Alter Rebbe here says now, very important point. And this point is something that is relevant for davening, but really for life itself. They would be right. They would be right. If a person was a single cellular structure, if a person was made up of one soul, and you could have one desire, You are who you are. You're not a complex individual. You have one direction in life. So if you had one direction and one soul, hiya mispalelas, it's the same soul that prays. It's the same soul, hiya machashavas, hamaharas, machashavazaras. It's the same soul that ruminates on, entertains weird, wacky, and crazy thoughts. If it was one soul doing all of these things, you'd be right. Then your davening is indeed worthless. Because if you cared about what you're doing, if you're really focused, your mind wouldn't be going somewhere else. What's the problem? The problem is that's not the case. Why are they wrong? They're wrong. In truth, there are two souls. This is what the Alter Rebbe brings out in the beginning of Tanya, from the name of Reb Chaim Vital, the star pupil of the Arizal, that each and every one of us has within him two souls that rage. Two souls, each one wants full control. Each soul wants full control. Nobody wants half control. No compromises. The Nefesh Elikis wants you to be a godly Jew. The Nefesh HaBahamas wants you to be an animal. And the battle rages. It's like the puck is dropped. You're born, the puck is dropped. The game begins. The competition is on. This is not a group of players who are on the same team practicing. This is for points. This is real. And then when you have Bar Mitzvah, when it's really real, because that's when the Nefesh HaBahamas comes with a great force, and that's when the puberty hits, and all the taivas, all the raging lusts and cravings that make the childhood look like child's play, dafka by Bar Mitzvah. Does it make any sense? A child becomes Bar Mitzvah, and dafka then, that's when he has the biggest challenges in life. The biggest raging urges to sin come dafka at the exact time of Bar Mitzvah. But that is exactly the point. Exactly at the time when the Nefesh HaBahamas is fully loaded and empowered, and you say, no, go for it. Now the game begins. The puck is dropped. Exactly at that time, the Nefesh HaBahamas comes back with full force. And the game begins. And this is life. This is the game of life. This is the competition of life, the battle of life. Two nefashos, the Nelchamas, they're constantly battling. And each one wants to win. Everybody wants the Stanley Cup, not one team. I will share the Stanley Cup. Never happened yet in history. The NHL has never had a team that said, let's just share it. Why do we have to duke it out in battle? Let's make a deal. Seven games for the Stanley Cup? Yeah. So we get seven games. He said, you win one, I win one, you win one, I win one. And then the last game, we'll just keep playing with scoreless, and everybody be happy. And you'll keep it for a month, and we keep the cup for a month, and go back and forth. Never happened in history. Why not? This way you take a 50% chance. You're playing for going... Because when you go for the gold, you go for the gold. No team plays to share. No halfways. You want to win. So the Nefesh HaBahamas wants to win. What does he want you to be? A buck, a mountain goat, a wild animal. That's what he wants you to be. A self-serving, rotten creep. And then he's happy. Baruch Hashem. That's what I wanted. That's what I wanted. Be miserable, self-centered, only care about yourself. Don't think about God or anybody else. A lot of people like that, unfortunately. The Nefesh HaLikis, he wants zero compromise. He wants you to be a holy Jew focused only on the prize of making this world a godly place. To live a life of total selflessness. Never think about yourself. Always think about others. Always think about the Ebesh. That's what Nefesh HaLikis wants. And so, Chol Hirhurei Torah, all thoughts of Torah, all thoughts of reverence for Hashem, of Yiras Shamayim. Where does that come from? It comes from the Nefesh HaLikis. V'chol Mili Da'alma, and all worldliness, I wish I could have that. I wish I could succeed here. I wish I could taste the other thing. I wish I could go and have this experience. All these desires for material, sensual gratification. Where is that coming from? Not from the Nefesh HaLikis. The godly soul doesn't want any of those things. Godly soul says, get me out of here. Where is that coming from? That's coming from the Nefesh HaBahamas. And because this is the case, you have to understand that davening is necessarily going to be the time when Machshava Zoros are going to come. Because davening is the battlefield. That's when the competition is on in earnest. And when the competition is on, this is always going to happen. So if somebody is trying really hard to daven and his mind is wandering, what's it a proof of?
Work.
It's a proof that the davening is good. If the davening would be meaningless, the Nefesh HaBahamas would say, why do I have to fight with this guy? He's anyway praying to himself. He's anyway just full of himself. He's anyway just praying and he's not thinking before God. Why do I have to involved? The Nefesh HaBahamas doesn't look for work. He's happy to go on vacation. If you do his work for him, he goes on vacation. The problem is when you're not doing his work for him, when he's afraid in danger of going out of business, that's when he comes back and he works hard. So in fact, Alter Rebbe rotates this 360 degrees. Everybody would intuitively think that bad thoughts are a proof that the davening is worthless and meaningless. And in fact, exactly the opposite is true. Now, davening is the perfect frame for this because the idea of davening is supposed to be a profound emotional experience. And like the Chavis HaLevavos says, there is no room in the heart for two feelings at the same time. You can't love and disdain something at the same time. You can love it at one point and disdain it at a later point. But the heart doesn't have, the way the heart works, the heart can only be singularly focused. And davening then is the time when we singularly focus on nurturing and culturing, acculturating a love for Hashem.
We could still love and don't like.
Yes, every Yid loves Hashem, but doesn't always like Hashem or like Yiddishkeit. Okay, fine. So that's Ahava Mesuteres. There's a hidden love. The point is you should love it and like it. You want it.
No, I'm not talking about this. The heart can carry both feelings.
Not the heart can carry dormant feelings. The heart cannot be actively engaged in opposite things at the same time. You can have dormant feelings beneath the surface, recessed, but you can't have feelings that are animated and activated in full throttle at the same time.
That's for sure.
So therefore, the person who is plagued, let's say, by doubts sometimes and anxieties, and then he has a lot of confidence, and then he's plagued with doubts, you don't experience it at the same time. Mm-hmm. He could be on a high, could be buoyed by his confidence, and then he could have times of fear and anxiety. And then he goes back to being, that's true, that can happen at the same time. Now here with davening, we have a problem. This is the challenge of davening. Well, davening looks so strange. Because on one hand, I feel like I'm getting somewhere. I'm expressing myself. I'm trying to connect to Hashem and emote. And it's not working. Incidentally, it's self-understood that this is not easy. No battle's easy. A battle is not a picnic, as they say. And players, when they're in competition, they really work hard. But so interesting how when the Torah talks about davening, what's the word the Torah uses? What's the terminology the Torah uses to describe the mitzvah of davening?
Tefillah.
No, not tefillah. No. Va'avadetem. Avodah shebelev. It's work, but it's not work with hands or feet. It's work in the work of the heart. In other words, it's work. It's real efforts have to be made. But these efforts are internal efforts. And the reason that there's efforts that have to be made, that's what the Zohar says, because it's Shas Tzloisa. It's Shas Krova, because that time of davening is a time of conflict and battle. It's a time of extreme competition. And during a time of extreme competition, you're not relaxed. You're engaged. You're working hard. You're throwing everything you have into the battle, into the game.
So it's a battle between the brain and the heart.
Why do you have to say brain and heart? In the heart, there's two things. B'chol levavcha.
B'chol
levavcha means b'shnei yitzarecha. The Gemara says b'shnei yitzarecha. You have to serve Hashem with all your heart, b'shnei yitzarecha, which is a subject for another day. How can you serve Hashem with the bad part of the heart too? Yeah, we say actually yes, the bad part of the heart also. But there's the idea of harnessing and channeling even the negativity. So that's the davening story, my friends. And focus on davening can hopefully make us davening better. But not only will it make our davening better, it can make life better. First of all, when you daven right, life is better. Mm-hmm. Secondly, now you have a better understanding and appreciation of how life works. This is a beautiful story told, the Rebbe told the story a number of times, that somebody once came to the famous Tzaddik of Nachum of Chernobyl, and he gave him an enormous amount of money. And a moment later, the next person that came to see him needed money, whatever it was, to marry off a child, and it was the same amount of money. And Ibn Nachum's initial instinct was to take the money he just got and give it to the next person. And all of a sudden, he started to think. He said, one second. Why should all the money go to one need, one cause? I should diversify, like anybody who does investing. Diversify a little here, a little there. And then he said, my own wife and children also are a charity case, basically. Because this is Ibn Nachum Chernobyl, devoted his life to Torah study, to blessing, davening for people. He said that there's no food in the house. The cupboards are bare. So he says, so I should give it out to many, distribute it, and take a little. And this was a real challenge. Al Pi Torah, he said, Al Pi Torah, that was the right thing to do. So Reb Nachum Chernobyl decided in the end to give the entire amount to this Nitzrach, to the person who came. He said, what was the point? He said, when did I start thinking about, you know, others have needs, and I have needs too? He said, that was only the second thought. Why? So because the first thought was the Nefesh HaLikis speaking. That was my first, Nachum Chernobyl's impulse was Nefesh HaLikis. But then he said, immediately, there's another side. And the other side says, couldn't stand it that a Yid should do such a mitzvah, get all this money and just simply transfer it from one, you know, like it's like a funnel. That's when the Nefesh HaLikis, he said, that's when he realized that the Nefesh HaBahamas, he just wakes up. When you're about to do a mitzvah, that's when he wakes up and throws everything at you. In the end of the day, we have this famous Hayom Yom we just had a few days ago, that the Nefesh HaBahamas is a behemoth. Doesn't mean he's a bull in a china shop. He could be cunning. He could be clever. He could even be a Hasidic Yetzirah. He could come with all kinds of Torah tainus, Torah ideas. So how do you know? How do you know? You have to look at what brings to Avodah B'Poel. What brings to the actual service of Hashem. Because in Judaism, it's all about nailing it down. Bottom line. And if it's going to be just like another cerebral or academic experience, you missed the point. The point is to take everything and translate it into action, which of course then is a mistake of the Meraglim, and like we talked about yesterday, and so on and so forth. And that concludes today's studies for Focus on Prayer to be continued. Right now we can practice, to be continued.